Around the NFL podcast. Yay, football! Maybe.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, coming to you from a virtual room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal, and Patrick Claibon. What is up, boys?
Woo!
What is going on?
It's an interesting day.
You know, big day, trade deadline. That's it.
We were, today, of course, we were recording on the day of the general election for the United States of America. I had been told during one of the game telecasts this week that Tuesday was a day off for the entire NFL company, but I have been working since 7 a.m. So that feels as if it needs to be modified to give a more thorough understanding of who is off and who is working.
I still get emails from the New York office because I took the job when I lived in New York for a year and worked out of that office once a week. And yeah, I do like getting on days like today. They're like, well, if you really need to get into the building, they give you certain instructions and stuff. And I'm thinking these New York fat cats, they don't real work is like.
At some point you made the decision to be, you know, a sports writer, someone who covers football as an adult, and a blogger instead of like a corporate hack. And so corporate hacks get these days off. We remain steadfast in our duties.
They can actually get in the building, all the corporate hacks out there. We have to like email six people and demonstrate an absolute need to get into the building. And then like, it's like, are you sure? We could have somebody rifle through your things and bring them to you in a plastic bag via FedEx in 6 weeks. It's like, no, I would like to have, you know, my stapler or whatever it is.
NFL Films sent me something on March 12th that I believe is sitting on my desk, and I'm about to pull like a Mission Impossible Tom Cruise at the top of an Asian skyscraper move to get in there. Anyway,
I don't think it's worth it.
You had beers on your desk too. I mean, like, why not, you know, those back too? You had those beers from Germany or so.
Oh, those are gone. Yeah, I saw those.
Oh, okay.
No more beers. Sorry, Dan.
Anyway, yes, it's election day, and we were, I would say, firmly reminded to be civil and not get too hardcore in sharing that realm of our personalities and opinions. But we hope that everyone has voted. And I do remember 4 years ago when we did the show right after the election. That was an interesting show. Today's show is right on the eve of the election. And yeah, there's some butterflies. Let's face it. This is going to be a wild night for this country. We're going to keep the focus on football right now. Patrick, how you doing, by the way? What's going on in the Claibon house tonight?
I'm living the dream. You know, we have the child who is dealing with the runny nose, which is DEFCON 5 here in 2020. So he's hanging out with us. We'll go get the little one. And, you know, we're okay. We're watching the results for everybody else. We got a lot of family in Alabama. So we're watching there and we're good. You know, no matter what, we got each other. And if everything goes down, you know, we had a good run.
All right, let's get into it. The trade deadline just passed as we sat down to record today, Tuesday, and a bit of a dud, you could say. You had, let's see, DeAndre Washington. The Dolphins acquired that running back from the Chiefs. You had another trade involving the Dolphins. The Patriots acquired wide receiver Isaiah Ford from the Dolphins in exchange for a 2022 seventh round pick. There were a couple other trades we could kind of dig into. Those were the deadline deals. However, a little of a bummer, Greg, because I know you've tracked this for a couple of years now, that the trade deadline had heated up in recent years and it was turning into something a little more saucy than it had been in previous decades. But no dice in 2020.
Yeah, it had been. And we saw a couple of deals. We've mentioned the Carlos Dunlap deal last week, and we'll get into a couple smaller deals like Quan Alexander. But I do think the fact that you get a compensatory pick back if a good player leaves via free agency really kills the deadline. Patra always makes this point, and he's right. You get a third-round pick back if, like, a high-quality starter – leaves your team in free agency, like a Will Fuller, who I know you're going to mention, Dan. And so it's like, unless you're getting that third rounder back, unless you're really in a hurry, because you get it a year faster if you trade it now, then it's not quite worth it.
Mark, would you like to say something today?
Well, I agree with that point. I mean, I think it's also, there are a lot of teams, because I one thing that kind of gets on my nerves about the trade deadline a little bit, and it's happening on Twitter. I'm sorry that I'm always pinpointing that app, but it's everyone wanting their teams to be, it reminds me of free agency 6 months later. Everyone wants their teams to be super active, but for a lot of these teams, like picking up a veteran for what's going to be 7 or 8 weeks, and then having to deal with what happens after, just this year specifically, doesn't feel like it made a lot of sense. Like maybe a team like the Saints, they're going for broke. But
here's why,
there are
though,
a lot of teams, Mark, in the middle.
It's our fault, though, because it's what? Great. It's good content. Not ours, like the four of us, but just...
it's Mark's fault.
The quote-unquote media. Because we do tons of trade deadline content because it scores, you know, on TV, on the internet. There's like a month worth of trade deadline content because everyone wants to read about it. It's fun. And so then the fans get like irrationally, they get their hopes up a little much.
I guess
really
just like 8 years into me being like overly excited about a minor trade, I've kind of not caught off guard or swayed emotionally by that as I have been in the past.
All right, let's
if they didn't want people to talk about it, right? If you were a close source to a situation, then stop leaking discussions regarding Will Fuller. you know, there's only so many players that are available, and fans obviously want teams to win, and personnel want to keep their jobs, and so there's that clash there that kind of makes things not happen sometimes, and you know, fans get sad, but they still, you know, the games are still coming, we hope, on Sunday, and they'll have something else to think about.
Plus, we lost Bill O'Brien. I mean, he's always good for
that's
a few
true
crazy moves. So.
Let's pour out one for Bob.
Bobby. All right. So, Quan Alexander, Greg mentioned, linebacker, acquired by the Saints in exchange for a conditional fifth-round pick, and Kiko Alonso, who I feel has been traded more than any player in the history of our league. Quan Alexander, if that name rings a bell... but not because you saw him making a bunch of plays the last couple of years. It's because the Niners gave him a ton of money in free agency last year. And it was one of those when, speaking of content mill and scoring, Greg showing that he's the old boss by using like corporate room slang for stories that do really good metrics. Oh, we had a big score with you.
I don't even know if that is slang. I just
free agency winners and losers story. But Quan Alexander was labeled by many as an overpay by the Niners, and they now decide to move on without him, moving him for not a ton of value.
Yeah, they get a fifth round pick, and it just got me thinking. And you're right; they paid him a lot of money last year, and he wasn't a huge contributor to their Super Bowl run. By the end, there was, you know, open question whether he should be benched because Dre Greenlaw was playing so well. So they have two good young linebackers, Greenlaw and Warner. They don't need Alexander. He's been hurt a ton. He misses a lot of tackles. But it did get me thinking, like, how this 49ers team is going to have to transition. And, you know, we'll talk about Jimmy Garoppolo. But also, Dee Ford was a guy they spent a pick and huge money on before last year. His guaranteed money is gone. After this year, I think they'll probably move on from him. They've always kind of been a high risk, high reward type of teams. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. This one didn't work because they basically are just giving him away, you know, trying to save a little money to the Saints.
Well, I mean, had they had, you know, the fourth quarter gone differently in the Super Bowl, everyone in the Bay Area would not have a problem with the money spent and everything else. When you don't, you know, finalize that Super Bowl win, the questions begin. I mean, Dan, to your point on Kiko Alonso, he now is in his fifth city. He has been traded endlessly. He's 32. He reminds me of the resume that I had when I was 32, where I kept moving essentially west across the country and asked like a family friend why I was not finding well-paid work. And he said, I'm looking at your resume and you look like someone on the run, which is slightly concerning to employers. But he is from Los Gatos, right outside of San Francisco, the Cats, which I spent a really bizarre New Year's Eve in one time, a little Kiko Alonso nugget.
Nice nug, bro. We've been working at NFL Media long enough, Mark, that when he was the second round pick to the Bills, he had a nice rookie season with them. And people in Western New York were so depressed about the state of professional football that you would have thought that Kiko Alonso was Lawrence Taylor II.
An old West favorite.
Hasn't played this year, so that shows you what kind of value Alexander has. Kiko Alonso is coming off a serious injury, has not played.
All right, speaking of linebackers on the move, the Steelers, this happened before the deadline today. The Steelers acquired inside linebacker Avery Williamson and a 2022 seventh round pick from the Jets in exchange for a 2022 fifth round pick. Jets essentially, you know, Avery Williamson, this is kind of an example of why you don't get as bad as the Jets get without there being layers of poor decisions. I think it was three seasons ago, the Jets had DeMario Davis, who was a nice player for them in the middle of their defense. He hit free agency, and then they made the decision, instead of retaining Davis, they signed Avery Williamson away from the Titans. And Williamson had a decent first year, blew out his knee his second year, and then was kind of in the doghouse with Greg Williams in year three. And DeMario Davis is now an all-pro and one of the best rush linebackers in football. So a lot of these things have to go wrong. But the Steelers get a player here, Patrick, that can somewhat fill the void for Devin Bush, who was lost to the torn ACL a couple of weeks ago.
And that was the discussion, right, pre-Devin Bush, was we need somebody who can play with speed in the middle of our defense. They lose Bush, and what a find, right? The Jets have somebody, you know, Greg Williams, of course. You have to first adhere to Greg Williams and then be successful in his system. You know, it didn't work out for Avery Williamson, who has a great bit, right, of doing things in his full uniform. And so as soon as the trade happens, he's out there hailing a cab in full uniform with an umbrella, which was great. I think it fits in. He fits in Pittsburgh. He's going to get into that defense to be plug and play. And that's the type of thing you look for in a trade deadline, right? A team that's a certified seller, that's in the cellar, that's not winning anything, and a team that's good. And you know, they exchange goods and services, and it works out. I think it definitely works out for the Steelers here. We'll have to see how the Jets use those picks.
They always take other guys' veterans and make them look better. I guess that's coaching. They always, like Steven Nelson, and it's just true. They've taken a lot of other guys' free agents you're not that excited about, and they're like, okay, that guy's solid now that he's with Pittsburgh.
They were looking at him, actually. There were whispers that when Ryan Shazier went down, they looked into him. So there's been an interest in him for a while.
The Titans are having all sorts of issues getting off the field on third down. They can't rush the passer. The secondary is inconsistent. So they acquire cornerback Desmond King from the Chargers in exchange for a 2021 sixth round pick. This one, I was scratching my head a little bit trying to figure out, because I know that King, Greg, had fallen out of favor in L.A., but he was a all-pro slot guy 2 years ago, and now he's going for a sixth round pick. That doesn't happen a lot.
And a double all pro because he was an all pro special teamer that year. That doesn't happen a lot either. I love watching Desmond King. He kind of reminds me of a better version of Chauncey Gardner Johnson, who annoys everyone he plays against. You know, he's just like a pest. He's got like a ton of energy. And he was in the doghouse last year because of disciplinary issues, some sort of, I don't know what it was. It was always vague with the Chargers, but the coaching staff and him seem to have problems. And so that's perfect. And he's on a contract year, so they only got 8 more games of him. They're not going anywhere, but it's huge for Tennessee, who's just so bad. They're historically bad on third down. They right now are the worst team, according to Mike Sando, in recorded history on getting off the field on third down. They've only recorded that since 91, but that's amazing that they're the worst team ever. Not just the worst team this year, the worst team ever. So anything that can help is a good thing.
We keep saying the Titans don't have an identity on defense. That's a distinct identity. So this threatens that identity if he comes in and makes them better.
Don't you feel like we're hearing it a lot this year in 2020? Various teams connected to the worst ever defense and name the category? Yeah. Seems to be a thing.
Yeah, somebody has to be the worst, right, in 2020. But when you like look at 2020 being the best year ever for offenses, if you're worse than everybody else, you're still bad.
So there was a lot of competition to be the worst in 2020 at anything, though. You got a rich King's field out there.
King's so versatile, though. I mean, I love watching him play in 2018. Vrabel and the Titans seem like, In theory, they'd be the perfect team for him. Use them in a bunch of ways.
And the matchmaking seemed odd, right? Because all the teams that have secondary players that are worth trading for are still contending. So, right. Especially when you look at, say, the East with if there's a Fuller for the football team or for the Giants, Gettleman signs, blanking on his name.
Logan Bradbury.
Yeah, James Bradbury, who he brought in as a rookie, right, to replace an All-Pro in Josh Norman. He brings him back. So, but the problem with the East is those teams are all technically still contending, so they're not going to ship them. And so, like, King going to Tennessee was maybe one of the only things that could actually happen, a team that was looking to deal somebody and a team that really needed help in the secondary. So I'm glad it worked out for both of them.
Yeah, it feels like a good reclamation project for sure. All right, moving on. That's kind of the trade deadline. It was kind of a, but what are you going to do? Still a lot of fun stuff to talk about, but let's hit the rest of the news. And let's start in San Francisco. Not a fun situation for the Niners, who are just, I don't know. I don't want to say it because I've mentioned on the show, you know, I do the power ranking show, and they have vexed me all season because they're just, every time you think they're done, they rise. Every time they rise and you're ready to take them seriously, they slide. But now something else has entered the picture, which is just injuries at another level. And Jimmy Garoppolo, will start there. He has a high ankle sprain again, but this is a different one. And this one is worse, suffered in the loss to the Seahawks in week 8. Kyle Shanahan deemed it a whole new high ankle sprain. It's worse than the last one. He will be sidelined 4 to 6 weeks. He's been moved to injured reserve, and there is a chance he needs surgery. And if he needs surgery, his season is over. It doesn't stop there. George Kittle, that's the Jenga piece. That's the most important part of the San Francisco 49ers offense. After further testing, it was revealed that he had a broken bone in his foot. It's a fracture. He is on IR. He is out 8 weeks. And if you do the math, it's pretty much donezo for George Kittle. Sessler, I don't think there's any – I usually don't say Sessler. I don't like that. Sometimes
I appreciate it.
People use last name, like you've done it to me. Sometimes it always stops me in my tracks.
I know, but that confuses it. When you do that, then I forget what it is I'm supposed to call you sometimes, because I remember that one aspect of it really annoyed you. And I'm like, which one was it that Dan doesn't like? And then you're making your own nickname. So I don't, you know, I'm not.
Yeah, Hansus is a little short. It's like something my CYO coach would call me in fifth grade if I was, you know, not getting back on defense fast enough. That's beside the point. The Niners, they're done now, right, Mark?
Well, I mean, considering that, you know, just days ago on our preview show on NFL Network, I'll mention, I was just, you know, singing praises all over again about Kyle Shanahan being the coach that can coach around injuries better than anyone else in the league. Well, at some point, you just have to wave goodbye to the ship, and too much has happened. I don't know if someone has a hex on that team, but I mean, I think for me, the question you have to, I mean, certainly someone like George Kittle, the new, he is deep into the future with this team. It's fair to ask if we've seen the last of Jimmy G. And if you say that, you know, you paid Quan Alexander a ton of money and he gave you what, 13 starts or something. They've given Jimmy G $85 million for 30 starts, and he's regressed. If anything, I mean, he's, you know, he's given you less to look at. And so I think it moves the Niners into a really pivotal offseason where are you going to hang tight with this quarterback going into next year? Or are you going to look around? Because I think it's fair to look around.
Well, especially when you think of the former Kyle Shanahan quarterbacks who might be available. You got Kirk Cousins. It'd be tricky to trade him, but I'll never forget Mike Silver being on our network reporting that Kirk Cousins was going to be a member of the 49ers eventually, because it was a unique report that basically Kyle Shanahan wanted to bring Cousins in, but he had to wait a year, and that was like in the March of 2017. And then Belichick comes calling with a guy Garoppolo at a ridiculously cheap value that they weren't really looking to get. And so they take him for a spin. They win 6 games in a row, and it's like, okay, let's ride with Jimmy G. But it's never really been a great fit since Jimmy G tore his ACL. Now, that's a small sample size, but you just don't get the feeling that Garoppolo is ever comfortable. So you got Cousins possibly available in a trade, and you got Matt Ryan maybe possibly available in a trade, who Shanahan was smited by the football gods with too. What did Kyle Shanahan do? I mean, this whole 49ers run has been totally killed by injuries, except for last year. I mean, it's tough.
I would point to Connor Orr's notation during our you know, special about various theories, conspiracy theories, where I think it probably ties back to an offense that the Shanahans laid on the Manning family a long time ago. I don't have any more details to that, but it's just something to look into.
Yeah, it obviously is what drove Patrick Mahomes to complete that third down pass to Tyreek Hill
in the Super Bowl. Clear connection.
But to Greg's point, like legitimately, so if Atlanta is near the top of the draft and we know Trevor Lawrence, maybe one overall of the Jets, Atlanta looking at Justin Fields out of Ohio State, Matt Ryan's available, Zach Wilson is at BYU, so there's all these quarterbacks available. I think with there already being a quarterback backlog, coming into 2020, that Jimmy G is going to be a Chicago Bear in 2021. Like, that just came to me thinking about this podcast.
How about a New England Patriot? I mean, they would give up a pick for Jimmy G. So here's the thing. Jimmy G, people think his contract's bad. It's not bad anymore. There's no more guaranteed money. He's making about 24 a year, which is literally the cheapest veteran in the league. Like, that's what Teddy makes. And I could totally see Belichick, like, giving up a third or a fourth to get him back.
I think it was Daniel Jeremiah who said recently that, what is it, 35 starts is what you 40. Need? Was it 40?
40, yeah.
It's interesting to me that Mark said it. Garoppolo's made 30 starts for the 49ers, but it's been over 4 years now. And it's like, at a certain point, you have to factor in the durability to all this as well. And Patrick, you made the point of Tyreek Hill, or was it Sammy Watkins? Down the sideline that changed the Super Bowl.
You can pick whatever. Either one.
Yeah, either or. But sports is funny. I just pulled it up on YouTube because it's a moment that will live on in infamy for the 49ers. 1:33 to play. Emmanuel Sanders beats the corner, beats the safety, has a step, and Jimmy G misses him by 3 yards on what would have been the touchdown that would have given them the lead back with 90 seconds to play. Do they hold on to win that game either way? I don't know, but it's just that sports. And there's no one's talking about Jimmy G coming or going if he hits on that pass to Sanders. But we'll see what happens next. Hubba hubba. Love quarterback drama. Moving on. Man, what a rough week for the Ravens. You blow a 10-point lead to the Steelers. Lamar Jackson looks like... You have, I don't think I could say that. You lose Ronnie Stanley, your left tackle, for the year. And then Marlon Humphrey, your all pro corner, announces that he has contracted the coronavirus. And as a result, 7 close contacts of Humphrey, that from Tom Pelissero, added to the COVID-19 list. Just a very tough situation. And COVID it's really, the wave is coming. I mean, it's been a rolling wave in this country and this world for months now. But in the NFL realm, you feel like there's a tidal wave building here.
Mm. Well, it's back to, you know, June, where we kept saying if it's happening in the country, it's going to be happening in the NFL. And we're at record numbers now in the country. So I am concerned. Obviously, not just about everyone who's contracting the virus, but just the how likely it is to finish 16 games for all these teams. It seems to get tougher each week. Now, when it comes to the Ravens, now we've become experts that we know that these close contacts have 5 days to get off of it, which in, you know, if you do the math, they could all be eligible to play on Sunday except for Humphrey. But we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, certainly more. Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, certainly more concerned about the virus, as Greg mentioned, when you're nearing 100,000 cases a day, those are going to exist in football. They're going to exist in the Postal Service everywhere, where people are out and they're around people. But in terms of concerns, losing Stanley definitely hurts. But, you know, they lost a game on a Monday night to the defending champions, and then there's the only undefeated team in the league. And there's an incompletion in literally the very last play of the game. I'm not super concerned going back to 72. Not like teams win every game. So I still think this Baltimore Ravens team, you know, is a real problem for the AFC.
I mean, you look at the players that if for instance, this 5-day window doesn't get out of this 5-day window, you've got 4-5 linebackers that are being sequestered right now, or put it, you know, quarantine. Sequestered isn't the incorrect term. I mean, that would be very problematic. I mean, football in general, they are luckier than the skies that these games in general happen every 7 days for these teams, because this is the kind of thing that would wreak ultra havoc if football happened every 3 or 4 days. You've got full position groups right now. No matter whether they play or not, they will not practice all week. And now that probably for some teams is lesser of an issue for the Ravens than it would be for others. But that is a inequality. And these inequalities have added up for certain teams. But we kind of forget about it. And we're just looking at their win-loss record. I mean, it's messy. And there is a little bit of an ominous aura to it as well.
Well, we have 2 months remaining in the regular season, right? Look at MLB. I know they played in the summer and it's a different situation with COVID. They survived the regular season by the skin of their teeth without using a bubble. As soon as the playoff hits, they got inside a bubble and they were able to get through the season without any COVID issues until the Justin Turner incident in the deciding game of the World Series. So almost perfect, but not quite there. I guess I'd be kind of shocked if they don't have some type of bubble situation in place at some point this season. It feels like, as my mom would say, you're spitting in the skoy and waiting for something terrible to happen.
Wait, what does that mean?
Well, you don't spit in the sky. You don't say things. Oh. You don't put things out there in the universe that you don't want to come back on you. But Andy got me.
The sky.
The skoy was like a portal.
My mom doesn't talk like that either, but I like to enhance the Queen's accent. Don't spit in the sky. All right. Other COVID news. Cowboys place Andy Dalton on the COVID list. You gotta be kidding me. Thankfully, according to a Todd Archer report, he's not asymptomatic. That is not a good choice. Cluster of words. I misread that. That means he has symptoms, right? If you're not asymptomatic,
that's correct.
Just say he has symptoms. What are we doing here? Anyway, bad news for Dalton, who it could not be going worse. His Cowboy season plays poorly, then gets concussed, and now has the COVID. So Ben DiNucci, you would think we'd get another start, but now we're hearing that he was so poor on Sunday Night Football that they might be bringing somebody off the street to start that game. The Cowboys are absolutely in the running for the number one overall pick.
And they're playing the Steelers. So whoever you put out there is not going to be thankful for the opportunity, I would imagine.
Are they in the running, though? I mean, the Jets got to win 2 games. I feel like the Jets are as much in the running for 0-16.
No, the Jets are the leader in the clubhouse. But if you are sitting on, they have 2 wins, right? And do you see another win on the schedule?
No, they're defunct now. Yeah.
It could be tough.
I would have been with you, Greg, before I saw the Ben DiNucci game on Sunday night. That it did not inspire confidence.
Well, I would. 2-14 is on the table. Although they do have games in this terrible division left, but 2-14 is very on the table. I guess I would, if we were going to do a sandwich, I'd put the Jets final record right at 1-15, probably would be my choice.
Well, you also don't need you don't need the number one overall pick to be in, a gold position come draft day. It does go back. I think we talked about it last week. We're throwing out different theories for some silly game we were doing. What if the Cowboys have an opportunity to bring Justin Fields or some other hotshot into their building? Would they have the gall to hit a complete reset?
I mean, Jerry Jones was into Johnny Manziel when Tony Romo was their quarterback. So I would put nothing past it. They said all the right things, and they always say all the right things. But if suddenly that opportunity for Trevor Lawrence came to the Dallas Cowboys, yes, they would consider it heavily and probably go in that direction, I think.
They say the right things unless you're Ben DiNucci. Poor guy, if he was listening to Dallas radio this morning, heard his owner, Jerry Jones, saying that, well, this guy just wasn't ready for it. He's just burying DiNucci as if DiNucci is the biggest part of their problem.
Could you even imagine if you mic'd up the luxury suite during that game? He looks. Who's the guy that cleans his glasses? Steven Jones. He goes, "That boy ain't ever starting another game for the Star. You hear me? That boy is done."
What's the skit with the shining the glasses business? They're fine with that. Okay.
Well, he did. That happened. That was a.
That was not Steven Jones, by the way. It's like the other offshoot child.
If Ben DiNucci starts another game, they're absolutely in the running for Trevor Lawrence. It is in their mission statement. If Ben DiNucci sees the football field again.
Was it the Eric Trump of the Jerry Jones family?
I thought it was a grandson, but I could be wrong. Maybe it was a son-in-law.
All right. Let's move on. Let's cover our tracks here. All right. Another COVID, one last COVID thing to share. Hopefully another one doesn't pop up by the end of the show. But yes, Broncos general manager John Elway and CEO Joe Ellis tested positive for COVID-19. Rap Sheet reported that the team is confident the virus transmissions happened outside the team facility. But who knows?
John Elway is 60 years old. Joe Ellis is 61. I mean, that's not in a that's not in the zone of, hey, you're young and fresh and you're fine. I'd be concerned about this stuff. I mean, it's getting all over the place.
I mean, some of the college players who are talking about how long it took to get rid of some symptoms, some of the pretty common mental side effects that you're a little foggy, you know, for maybe months afterwards. That concerns you when you got quarterbacks who had it and, you know, things like that. It didn't get a lot of attention, but Ryquil Armstead of the Jaguars is out for the year because he was hospitalized twice with COVID. That was a guy who might have started a running back for the Jaguars, and so it's all a lottery.
It sucks.
Once you make the decision to play and not opt out, then whatever happens with you COVID wise is just kind of on you. And so that was
along.
That's my concern, is what incentive is there for a player to report symptoms? If you have symptoms and you're just going to be out and potentially maybe your career could be in question. So
Marlon Humphrey had symptoms last week, was out a day, didn't test positive, and then was back practicing with his team for 2 days and then played in the game. So that shows everyone can be doing everything right. No one's at fault there. But it's there's no right answer.
Right. And not to belabor, but he's one of the guys that they do the test on Sunday. You don't get the result till Monday. And he went into the game having been positive for Corona. That's not that far from the Dodgers scenario, right? I mean, that just is very murky. And it's like, we're going to press on. We're going to play all these games. But we are talking about like the health of your players and coaches.
Honestly, how did we get here? Imagine it's 2017. The four of us are doing the podcast and then somebody showed up and like, here's a tape of the November 3rd, 2020 show, including the top of the show discussion, by the way. So let's take this back to about 2015. Imagine it's madness. The world that we live in, inhabit, it's crazy,
I would say, man. Like Mark, you just don't age. Love the shirt. You just don't age. I know you older, but you know.
Thanks. Well, it's these are methods that didn't exist back in 2015 that I'm using right now.
Unbelievable. All right. All right. So there's the update of everything that's going on in the league. Before we get to Monday Night Football, curious boys, with the trade deadline now in the rearview mirror, if you have any trades that you think should have happened, and I'll start here. Will Fuller should be on the Packers right now. This one made sense to me. There was reports, there was smoke around this. Fuller is on an expiring contract. He's a veteran that will command pretty good money, you would think, on the open market. The Texans are a team that is neither a team of the present or the future as things currently stand. So anything to recoup some draft assets, you would think, would be something they'd be interested in. And for the Packers, man, you know, you watch that game on Sunday and it just reminds you, as Dalvin Cook rips them apart, that they have a lot of the same problems on defense that ended their season last year. And you might not be able to fix that in a trade deadline, or not have anybody out there that you feel comfortable going after. So why not do the next best thing? And you have Aaron Rodgers playing at, you know, all pro levels. Go get him another big time weapon and see if you can just outscore your problems. I think your window is finite with Rodgers. He's doing it in a big way this year. Why not just go for it? Because I know you have Alan Lazard on IR, and I guess he's coming back at some point, but Marquez Valdes-Scantling is 115 out of 117 on the graded wide receivers for PFF. I mean, that was an obvious area of upgrade and would have made the Packers terrifying, because Fuller's been healthy and very good for the Texans this year. But apparently, according to reports, there was a disagreement internally with the Packers about what he was worth, Fuller, because he is an injury risk. He is a guy you have to then re-sign. Do you want to give up a mid-round pick, I assume maybe a second or third, for a guy that might not stick around or might not stay healthy? I get it, but it was worth the risk to me.
Here's the thing. They just used a second-round pick on a guy who's not even playing. And so, like, I
who AJ Dillon?
Yeah, AJ Dillon, and then Jordan Love is a first round pick. And so, I understand that you want to maximize value, but how many years of Aaron Rodgers does the team have left? With your draft pick, you said that it's not that many. So why not? I saw, like, we all sat there and watched Alan Lazard wide open catch a ball. He ran a great route, but he got chased down from behind. He doesn't have that type of speed. Will Fuller does, and I'm sure he's an injury risk. Everybody on earth is an injury risk. That's why we're doing these shows from home, because everybody's an injury risk. I don't understand that logic. I'm with you, Dan. This is a trade that should have happened.
I am fine with the Packers not making this move. I just when you watch the Packers.
Of course you are, Greg.
No, usually I want them to make a move, but when you watch the Packers, lack of receivers really seems pretty low on their needs. They are a great passing attack. They were a great passing attack last week. They were extremely efficient throwing the ball. Lazard will get back. Like, yes, I would love to have Will Fuller, but then you got to give him the franchise tag or sign him long term. And so unless you're willing to do that, I don't think it's like a huge like move for them. For 8 weeks. And I don't like the fact, I don't like the argument that they drafted poorly, in terms of AJ Dillon, it looks like, and Love, they're not getting anything out of. If Love has a 20% chance of being a top 10 quarterback, that was a great pick. They had two first round picks a year ago. You don't see anyone like going crazy because Rashawn Gary and Darnell Savage gives them nothing week after week. I mean, Savage is just there. Gary gives them, it's like, that's what you usually get with your picks. So it's like, I don't mind. If you take a chance at a quarterback, get your defense better. Man, that's
carry
all.
That yeah, carry that Goody.
Greg
water.
Has been on the phone with Goody, I think, and they're getting along.
They my already goodness. Did that stuff, though. That's my thing. They've already got their quarterback, right? So use a pick, use a three, use a two, whatever.
Get, and it wasn't
take a shot.
Sounded like draft, it was going to cost the two.
It was not just that they didn't use a first or second. They waited until the sixth round to take a defensive player after you got run out of the building in the playoffs against Raheem Mostert and the Niners.
That's
I don't know. And that's all ancient history now. My point was, yes, Greg, is their offense, passing offense especially, very good right now? Yes. But would it have made them better with Will Fuller? I think so. And why not? But they had their reasons. All right. Who's got one? Who else got one?
I've got one. I want the Cowboys to step up because Mark, you know, tweeted it out. They're in primetime a couple more times. They're in 425. I mean, poor Nance and Romo are going to do Cooper Rush starting this week. That's the Cowboys player who I guess is probably going to start. Who's been
that's
on?
That's not a person.
It's a real person. I saw him in training camp once. At one point, he was in a battle with Kellen Moore. How about that?
Kellen Moore should start.
There's your sign.
Yeah. Here's what they should do. You know, Jerry Jones got into the Hall of Fame, you know, for doing things for the good of the league, like making the league more money, essentially. You know, the NFL's famous for doing things for the good of the league. How about you go trade for Jameis Winston for the good of the league? And so when we're watching the Cowboys, it's just a little more fun to watch. Just do it for the 27 million, or it's like 35 million people watching on Thanksgiving. Let's watch Jameis Winston. Who knows? You might even win some games and win this terrible division anyways. I'm sure the Saints would give him away for very little. Just for the entertainment value.
Jameis Winston, Greg, is coming off a season where he threw 30 interceptions. Now you're going to trade him in the middle of the season and say, learn this playbook in a week, and you're going to...
It would be entertaining.
You can't tell me that they wouldn't be way better with Jameis.
Yeah, I mean, what's the worst thing that could happen? What's he going to do, throw a pick?
Give up a fourth for the good of the league. Seriously, the amount of people, if you did the math, it's probably like 400 people are going to be watching Cowboys games nationally for the rest of the year. Just do it.
Why are you giving up a high? It's going to be a high fourth round pick, Greg. Why are you giving that up?
All right, a fifth, whatever. The Saints should be fine with it.
1 year, like damn near 1 month.
It's out of the box.
I'm only down on your trade because you were down on mine, Greg. Patrick, you got one?
Yeah, I got one. The Denver Broncos send Kareem Jackson to Cleveland for a third round pick. He's got an out in his contract that basically is only going to be about a $2 million cap hit next year. You get a productive veteran player that gives Joe Woods another piece to play with. They can do a lot of things, move around, be versatile in the secondary. I'm not saying give up, right, on Andrew Sandejo or any of the other guys in the secondary, but you get another piece because, let's be honest, like how many years of Cleveland Browns contending do you really get? Yeah, move Njoku for whatever pick you want to take the place. Add another piece in the secondary while you've got Myles Garrett playing at a defensive player of the year level, and just see what you can do. You know, you've got this kind of neutered offense right now. Maybe you get Chubb back, and you become like this defensive team that can try to do something. You know, make a run. We added a playoff spot. Let's do it. Take a shot.
I like the idea because they're in their bye week, so you'd have time to acclimate. That works in the COVID, you know, waiting window, that business. Their front office seemed like just completely intent not to do anything, but especially at safety where, I mean, Sendejo has been a huge liability, actually, week after week. I thought they might go after Anthony Harris of the Vikings. You know, there are some shared DNA ties with Stefanski and others, and he would have fit in well, but they were very inactive. Well, I don't know. I'm not shared DNA in terms of career, Dan. I mean, that's how we meant to use that on the show. I don't know how you use it. You explain how you, why that offended you, or why, explain why that got you up in arms.
I don't think it was the arms.
Yeah, Mike's cutting out. I can't expand.
I'm fine.
That was my trade too basic.
You have a trade?
Literally no reaction. To,
you know, guy drops one, it. Guy yeah. drops one Orson Welles sound bite, and the whole thing goes off the rails.
I like it. Kareem Jackson is a beast. Watching him last week, just laying out Chargers, it was like sometimes it's unsafe to be around Kareem Jackson. Like, he was putting people in the hospital last week.
All right, Mark, close it out.
I will give you a quick thing with literally no analysis at all. Alden Smith to the Seahawks. I could just see it. But this is what kind of stuck with me. If you really wanted to shake up things up for two teams that still believe in themselves, and these are two teams that are playoff hopefuls but have major identity issues, it is the Bears and the Eagles. So what you do is you switch coaching staffs from top to bottom, okay? Peterson – goes to New York, and he's paired back again with Nick Foles. Doug Peterson goes to Chicago, and he gets Nick Foles. Matt Nagy and Andy Reid offshoot also goes to Philly. Both staffs, I think, get a massive fresh start. Jim Schwartz gets a good Bears defense. Chuck Pagano, a good Philly defense. Wentz and Foles need some life. They need some new activity, and they're invariably going to meet in the playoffs with now flipped opposing coaching staffs. That's how you turn an Eagles in the playoff scenario into something that has a lot of bizarre storylines. I would watch that game.
Let's just trade the teams themselves, right? Just switch the uniforms.
Well, because my problem is, like, Matt Nagy with the Bears is killing me. But if maybe he goes, just you give him a whole new world.
Seems like a rough trade for the Eagles. You trade a guy with a statue outside and Jim Schwartz for Matt Nagy. I don't know.
Well, they already traded a guy with a statue outside.
I thought you were going to say, just how about trade Wentz for Foles and like a first round pick? Now that would be saucy.
That's interesting too. I like that.
That
a lot.
Well, I never thought of, like, if Wentz got traded, a mid first round pick, would that, I feel that, like it'd be a multiple.
Doesn't seem like enough, but I'm just,
maybe a first and a second. It's been a bad year for Carson Wentz. We'll get into that more on the Thursday preview show. All right, let's hit some Monday Night Football.
Looking for the tie. 2-point conversion. Shotgun. Jones looks to his right, throws to his right, and it is broken up. Trying to hit Lewis. Flag down. Antoine Winfield thought he won the battle. Penalty marker on the play. And here
there is
the call.
Foul for defensive pass interference on the play.
Yeah! It's over. The Buccaneers hold on.
But, you know, you could take Tom Brady out of New England. He's still going to catch the breaks. You know, Antoine Winfield Jr. goes streaking across the end zone, knocks away the 2-point attempt from Daniel Jones. Ball is a little bit behind his intended receiver and a little bit late. But that was the nature of this game. 25-23, Bucks beat the Giants at the Meadowlands, a game where I think a lot of people were surprised that the Buccaneers didn't just roll up the Giants, but New York's been showing a little bit of fight the last couple weeks, but they keep on getting beaten in a heartbreaking fashion. And Mark, this game, without it turning into a complete pile on here, but this game really is different if Daniel Jones is just competent. If he hits on a couple of open throws downfield, if he makes the right decision with the ball when the pass rush is on him. If he even makes that throw on time on the 2-point conversion, the Giants have an upset win. But instead, you're left wondering about whether he is the guy in New York.
Yeah, and Dan, I know that you text with Giants fans back east regularly. I do the same with a great friend of mine. And like, we were just, it's a human roller coaster ride with Daniel Jones, because for a couple minutes, we were texting about how you've got to go get another quarterback. Forget the 40-game rule, because 40 games puts you week 12 of next season. And I just think this is who Daniel Jones is. But then a couple minutes later, he does something that kind of makes you think, wait a minute, he is a special athlete when he's on. There was this one, I mean, there's a bad play where I thought that, and they pointed it out, that he missed what would have been a clear touchdown on one side of the field, and he whips it Slayton. In the other direction. Interception, Carlton Davis. We saw the missed balls deep, but then we saw it at the fourth quarter, the way that he made connections and converted third and fourth downs, that gave me a little bit of hope. So ultimately, I'm left utterly confused. I really think that Joe Judge gave me an idea that I stick with Joe Judge. There's something about him and what he does for the Giants that they've not had under their previous coaches. But with Daniel Jones, I'm left befuddled as to what to say about him, other than I think he is this hot and cold roller coaster ride.
Where's the highs, though? I mean, they were there last year.
There were some beautiful throws.
No.
Here and there, but not enough.
Not last night. That was a disaster. And they were giving him a lot of credit for that last drive. It reminded me so much of the Sam Darnold scene Ghost Game, because Jones was like kind of begging to just be pulled out of the game or for it to end. That last drive was a nightmare. He almost threw four interceptions on that drive alone. There was the fourth down play, and this is the play where it killed me, where they picked up the fourth down, but there's three guys rushing. There's absolutely no one around him, and he just starts running around, almost runs into the sack, totally panicked, doesn't wait for guys to get open, and he's just not there. And kind of like the scene Ghost Game, it's the game that got me thinking, like, oh, this might not happen. This might not work. I was very high on Daniel Jones coming into this year, because I did see the highs last year, but I'm not seeing it now. Just whether it's confidence or what it is, he's so scrambled mentally and mostly physically too. Like, it's not like he's been accurate, which is what you would want out of him. It was tough. Like, if they had a better backup, I think it would not hurt to give him a week or two off.
And people were wondering, like, Greg, I saw your tweet about the third down, and we exchanged tweets about what Jason Garrett was calling on third downs. And it's just, it's probably hard to call plays for Daniel Jones when we talked about Jameis. Daniel Jones is basically Jameis Winston in his willingness to give the ball to the other team. And you want to pinpoint the highs, but the problem is, like, it's, you know, the scores at the end of the game are cumulative. Right, like seven points in the first quarter is the same as 7 points in the fourth quarter. And Dan, you mentioned the throw to Slayton. Like, if you take out the Derek Carr pass to Henry Ruggs over the weekend, where like a gale force wind blew it 40 yards out of bounds, that was the worst pass attempt all week. Slayton's running wide open, it's probably a touchdown, and he airmails it's nowhere close from a clean pocket, and it's just. You have to be able to succeed in those circumstances, and he didn't.
I mean, I'll say this, because I know where Mark's coming from on this too, because he knows Daniel Jones is fully aware that he's having a bad game, and he knows he's in prime time, and he knows there's pressure starting to build on him maybe internally in the organization, and certainly with the fans that root for the Giants. It showed me a little something that he kept coming and didn't completely fold up the tent. The touchdown pass to Golden Tate was a beautiful throw. I think he does have the skill set, but I think it's a confidence thing more than anything else right now, where he was trying to just make things happen. And, you know, that's a rookie or a young quarterback mistake. So I don't want to completely write him off, but the Giants are kind of starting to edge now into that territory of the Jets, only it's a year sooner, where it's like, all right, there are things we like about this kid. And there are things that make us super nervous, and we might be picking number one or number two in this draft. That's a tough spot for the Giants and whoever is making the decisions. It won't be Dave Gettleman.
Well, you're not going to let the Jets and probably Washington go select franchise quarterbacks while Dave Gettleman takes a right guard. I mean, if you have the opportunity to upgrade, and they're
Gettleman's not going to be there if they're in the top three of the draft, right?
I'm not sitting here telling you Daniel Jones is this, like, he's going to correct all these problems. Did I see a couple good throws last night? Do I see someone that can make all the throws but seems completely confused and is in an offense where he's losing confidence? Yes, but am I going to, like, say that he is not on any level, like, athletically fit to be a pro quarterback? I won't say that. Like, I did see some good things, but I don't think he's in a very functional offense, first of all. And I don't know if
The coaching did an awesome job last night. The running game was awesome. They were playing the number one.
But Greg, you're done with Daniel Jones at this point. You're done with him. I'm not based done. On your
I went in super high, but I think he's imploding. I mean, he's the worst quarterback in the league right now. So you got to do something about right now, because this team is competitive.
Benny DiNucci's in the house. Sam Darnold. Yeah.
I just mean of, like, a regular starter coming into the year. Him and Darnold would be the two picks. So he's lost right now, and you have to figure a way out of that. I mean, that game was won a million times by their receivers, and their offensive line played well, and their defense played great. The only reason they lost that game was because of Daniel Jones.
It was a tough game for him. There's no doubt about that. On the other side of the ball, the Bucks, I think it's, I kept them, for instance, at number three behind the Steelers and Chiefs in the power rankings this week. And then people are getting on me. Oh, they barely beat the Giants and all this stuff. This is a long season in our league. And what happens is every once in a while, you don't play so hot, but if you're a good team, you still find a way to win. So yes, should you be a little disappointed that they were kind of sleepwalking through this game? And maybe those Danny Dimes interceptions are the only reason they didn't sleepwalk straight to a loss. Sure. But they won. So I kind of give them a pass, and I'm still hyper confident and high on them as they head into a huge Saints matchup on Sunday night.
And they're only going to get better. As much as the broadcast discussed Antonio Brown, he's still the reason he's coming to the game is because he's a good football player. So they're going to get better on offense. Godwin may get back. They'll be really scary. And Todd Bowles, the job that he's done with the defense, they're just a really good football team, or a really solid football team that's going to be a problem in January to somebody.
I mean, and Gronk is becoming a better factor week after week. I mean, that I questioned 3 weeks ago if he would be, and he's scored multiple times. You could see Brady going for him. And they essentially bench Rojo, Ronald Jones, and Fournette. Well, I don't think Fournette's anything great at all, but I mean, they've got a couple guys they can use. Scotty Miller's picking it up. And like, you know, not to go back to Daniel Jones, but their defense is one that's going to confuse quarterbacks. Their secondary has 65, they have 65 points off takeaways this year. That's second in the league. I mean, this is one of the few defenses you can count on to mess up the other side of the ball.
Yeah, I think I'm with you, Dan, that I'm not worried about that game last night. I think the Giants have played sneaky good for a while, almost the whole season. They've looked like a better, more competitive team overall, and it was not the Bucks' best night. Brady's been, had some tough days against Patrick Graham. I've said it a few times. I think the Patriots dynasty ended in week 17 last year when Graham came in there and with Flores helped cook up Brady pretty good mentally as the coordinator of the Dolphins. And he had Brady a little confused. They're not the same without Chris Godwin. I do think you saw, like, possibly one little problem with this team last night is the loss of Vita Vea starting to show up, because their biggest weakness, it's amazing this is their biggest weakness, is their pass rush. On paper, it looks good, but JPP and Shaq Barrett really aren't having great years. And opposing quarterbacks have a lot of time, and it's an aggressive defense, so you can try to beat them over the top. I mean, every team's got some issues, but I think that's something that other NFC teams, like the Packers, for instance, with a great O-line, a great quarterback, can maybe take advantage of if they ever got a rematch.
I did think it was an interesting commentary, a commentary on Daniel Jones from Bruce Arians, that he was able to, like, put Rojo in the doghouse while Fournette was kind of being inconsequential. I think he ended up with like 3.8 yards per carry. I think that was Bruce Arians saying, I can still punish this guy and not play my guy who's been tearing up the league, because I'm not super worried about the Giants here, and he shouldn't.
It's fair.
Fair. All right, there you go. Monday night. By the way, the Monday Night Football telecast I have a couple of takes. I have one take, and Greg, you mentioned something before the show. I love the graphics. I love the visuals of Monday Night Football. ESPN's done a nice job. It looks very clean. I'm way into that. So after a couple of years of that telecast getting killed, I just want to say I like that. I even like the dopey, little graphic things with like when they had, Breeze and Brady on the seesaw with Peyton Manning, that computer graphics. I'm into that. So I just want to say I'm enjoying the visual of Monday Night Football, even if I didn't enjoy the Grease Man, Brian Greasy, with the following quote, Tom genuinely wants to see guys succeed. I truly believe that. And he's doing the same thing with Antonio Brown. Put it on the Grease Man.
I don't want to speak of the famed Sessler Greasy incident that may have colored my relationship with Brian Greasy as a broadcaster, but there was the moment where Daniel Jones basically pegs Winfield in the back on the 2-point conversion that would have tied the game, and Greasy's like, Tom Brady's a winner. And I'm like, wait, like, was Tom Brady over there using a mind trick to force Daniel Jones to throw a horrible pass? So, of course, yeah. I joke about it, and I've got angry Brady defenders assuming that I'm maligning the greatest.
Well, I know. Why did Greg get on you like that? That was unnecessary.
Now, Greasy, a former teammate of Tom Brady, so not totally unbiased.
Michigan guy.
And last night, there's a lot to praise Tom Brady about. Last night was not his best game or the passing game's best game. It was the defense setting them up. Like, it's okay to call a spade a spade. And I think they've been doing that. I've been enjoying this Monday night crew more as the season's going along. I think they're getting their footing. They're put in a tough spot. You know, it's a new crew. A lot of eyes on them. I think they're getting more comfortable. It's a solid watch.
I think that, like, in the past, these guys were given years. Like, I think when, like, Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit did week one, and my notation was, I know these guys are a 1 week thing for pros and then they're going to go back to college, but they've been doing it so long that they just had this natural chemistry, and asking these 3-man booths to come in and have that right away is a big ask. And it's also happening in a terrible environment where Steve Levy's trending after the game. Everyone's trending. You say one false word and you're getting killed. That said, you're announcing Monday Night Football. The rope is short. I mean, so you better find that chemistry quick.
We got to check with Andrew Marchand of the New York Post, who is, I find him to be the greatest media reporter out there on Twitter now.
He founds out about stuff that happens at our shop before we do.
He's been on our show, and his brother's a listener, so that's cool too. We love the whole Marchand clan. I want to see if they're still looking at this team as a rental until they can go get some high profile talent, or if they're getting a legit audition right now. We love that stuff. We talk about it typically in the off season, but little nug there, little combo on election day in 2020. Before we say goodbye, Thursday Night Football, let's turn our attention now to week 9. Here we are, all the way to week 9. And we hit, it's Packers at Niners on a short week, obviously, for both teams. And we talked about the Niners plenty here and the tough situation they're in now. The schedule is really an uphill climb, and now they don't have their quarterback or their best player on the field. They already lost their best defensive player in Nick Bosa a couple of weeks ago. So the Niners are in a lot of trouble. What do you think about this game, Mark? The Packers coming off a disturbing loss in their own right on Sunday.
No, the biggest news item is that Corona's hit this game too. That there's, Ian Rappaport mentioned that there's pessimism. Aaron Jones will play because of his calf injury. They don't have A.J. Dillon because of a positive Corona test. Jamal Williams and Kamal Martin. Jamal Williams, another running back, is a high-risk close contact. So you've got Tyler Irvin and Dexter Williams in the backfield. They have a combined 15 carries in the NFL. That worries me less than if it was a Ben DiNucci being rolled in, because running backs sometimes just seem to be able to kind of make it work. But again, it's another game that we're not, 6 weeks from now, we won't look at the result and remember some of these positive tests, but it impacts an offense. And I think they've missed Aaron Jones a little bit. I mean, and they're certainly going to, Jamal Williams has stepped in and been pretty good, but to take them both out, I mean, that's not, they want to be able to run the ball, and then you're really compromised on that front.
Right. If Jimmy G and Kittle were in this game, I'd pick the 49ers just because I think the matchup is so perfect. against this run defense that of the Packers that everyone just is crushing Petten for with good reason. It's a perfect matchup for Kyle Shanahan to kind of have one of those scheme games. I wouldn't surprise me if the 49ers, the zombie 49ers, still find a way to win some of these games down the stretch.
No, they always do.
Right. He can come up with a scheme game in the right matchup. But now it's not just Jimmy G. Nick Mullins is going to start. It's weird that I think losing Kittle and Debo Samuel is indeed out for this game again, you know, is bigger even than losing Jimmy G to Mullins. Because then it's just, there's not enough things. You also don't have Mostert and Tevin Coleman in the running game either, but there's just not enough things. And you could even argue, like, over the course of this season, losing Bosa, Ford, and then Buckner, who they traded, has been a bigger impact on the 49ers than any of these offensive injuries, because they just don't have a pass rush that can scare you anymore. And you would think against Aaron Rodgers and this Packers offensive line, then that spells doom.
And what Kyle Shanahan does so much is maximize the talent, right? But when you use the talent, right? So
there's a limit.
How many reverses can Brandon Ayuk run? and I really think, honestly, like the broken foot that Debo came back from, he came back so fast from it. We've seen Dez, Sammy Watkins in the past lose whole seasons to that. I was surprised Debo came back. He looked a step slow. So they've been going through it. So it's hard to not pick, the Packers in this revenge situation against a team that just demolished them, just ran right over them. They had no answers for in the playoffs. If I believed in looking ahead to an opponent, I guess I would call that here. I don't think that happened. I think Dalvin Cook just dominated them. But, I mean, that's what happened to them in the playoffs. They got ran over. It's just, you know, is Jamichael Hasty going to run over this team to the extent that Dalvin Cook
can? I bet it'll be close. I really bet it'll be close. I don't know what they're saying in the desert right now, but it would not surprise me.
They're saying we want to make money. They're saying we're going to tell you whatever we say that's going to make money.
Packers have their problems too. They're not quite getting the same juice up front from the Smith brothers, who are not brothers. They're not a perfect team either. I would have loved to see this game with everyone healthy. It's annoying.
Greg, every Smith though is a brother on some level, because at one point someone named Smith was the first Smith.
It's fair.
Well, and we're all, if you really want to look at it from, especially now in this moment of time, we're all brothers, you know, we all bleed red.
Hopefully.
I've never felt closer to you, Dan.
Well, that's all.
And you know what? By the way, Claybon, you are obviously a voice of reason, typically on social media with things like sports cliches. But I will not be here and stand down as you say that trap games don't exist. Trap games absolutely exist, and for you to casually assert that they don't minutes ago. That will not stand on this show.
It was a minute and 26 seconds ago, and yes, trap games are not a thing. You play the people that you're playing against, and nobody, like, a ball's not in the air, and you're like, wow, I got Calvin Johnson next week.
It's not literal.
Could it be the subconscious?
It's a subconscious in the mind. Mm-hmm. Benny DiNucci is done in Texas. That Yankee never steps foot in Jerry World ever again. That happened in the luxury suite.
Poor guy.
That's why he's not playing.
It's okay, Ben.
Back to Bay Ridge with Benny DiNucci.
DiNucci right. Should be shining the glasses. I found him a role right there. You got a job.
I bet he can make about 130 grand a year shining the glasses.
I'll shine the glasses if that's what the going price is.
All right. Good stuff. Patrick Claybon, you're a prince. Beard's looking very sharp as well right now.
That would probably be my reaction to us doing this show in 2015 would be like, I have a beard. I can do that.
That's the big takeaway. Yes, we'll be back on Thursday. The world's going to be a little bit different or exactly the same. We shall see. But thank you to everyone for listening. And Ricky Hollywood, how are you, by the way? I've been noticing you because I could see you when you're producing. You're lounging on the bed today. You're petting the dog. It didn't seem like you were paying that close attention. But at the same time, I know you're a woman that can multitask. So maybe you were.
Yeah, I've been paying great attention. Great show. Right.
That's exactly what someone says when they weren't paying attention.
You guys nailed it.
Good stuff. Dan Hansen signing off for Ricky Hollywood, the great Ricky. And make sure you check it out. I hope she's, you got it pinned on your profile, I'm sure. Ricky, your amazing article that came out last week on NFL.com. Out and proud in the NFL. Patrick Claibon, the quiet storm, the old boss. Until Thursday.